Because that's what the world needs is a couple of fat, you know, pasty white guys talking about wrestling.
Hey, who you calling pasty? Hey, welcome to the Double Dropkick Show. I'm Heath Mullican.
I'm Mark Whitman.
And we are so excited to be starting season two of the show, of the podcast, where we talk about the wrestling you grew up with and the wrestling you need to watch now. So do you see what I did there,
Mark? I did. You kind of changed it up a little bit.
I did. Yeah. Hey, this is a very, these next two episodes, I'm very much looking forward to because it's the shoot interviews with your Double Dropkick Show host. But before we get to our shoot interviews, we want to send you on over to the gimmick table and tell you about some other great shoot interviews. Mark, tell them what's on the gimmick table this week.
Coming to us from RF Video, the Eric Bischoff shoot interview. It's about 4.5 hours long where Bischoff sits down with RF Video and goes over his whole career. I mean, from starting with Vern in the AWA and all the way up to, he doesn't talk about TNA. But he goes all the way through his WWF run and him leaving the company there. Didn't get into any TNA stuff. So
really?
I wonder if there's some contractual stuff there where they're, I think he may still be a producer on that show.
Jason Hervey, their company is.
Right, that's what I mean, yeah. And he talks about that. He talks about the beer that they're doing, their production company, reality TV. He goes into a lot of detail about convincing Hulk Hogan to turn heel. Talks about the Starrcade match with Sting. And puts a lot of the blame for the match being bad on Sting.
Right.
Not on Hogan. He said they had only seen Sting in that trench coat. And they get backstage for the match and he starts taking all his stuff off and he's got no muscular definition or anything like that. And said it just, they felt like with him being off as long as he had been off,
right,
that he should have come back in really good shape and ready to go. And he just wasn't.
Yeah.
And that's always a knock on Sting. There's a big debate right now about whether he should be in the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. And, you know, I tend to think not.
Really?
I think not. I mean, and I like Sting, but
you think it needs to smarten up.
Right. Wrestling Observer is a different standard.
Right. Gotcha. Yes. Okay.
And a guy who took a lot of money and phoned it in when there wasn't many people there is, you know.
Right.
It was notorious. I think it was Hall and Nash when they were, he kind of told them one night, we're just in this place and there's just this many people here. Why go out there and try to tear the house down?
Right.
And that was kind of, not just him, that was a run rampant NWCW. Yeah. It's a good interview.
So if you've heard Bischoff's interview with Austin and all that stuff, this stuff covers stuff they didn't cover.
A little bit, but not a lot.
Right.
I got to be honest. I mean, there's some stuff on here, yeah, that he didn't cover with Jim Ross and Steve Austin, but that was, wow, that was almost 6 or 7 hours.
Yeah.
Right? Between those two shows, I mean.
Might have been.
At least 4 hours.
Yeah.
Between those two shows, because they both went to
episodes, right.
Two episodes. And you're just not going to get a whole lot of stuff that you didn't get. I'm just going to be honest with you.
Right.
That if it's worth it to you, like you really are interested, like it was good for me. I enjoyed it. The knock on RF Video has always been, and we joke, we've talked about it. They got the banner in the background and they got one or two cameras and they don't, you know, and it's just looking right at this guy's face for 4.5 hours. I usually put them on in the background.
Right.
And I can do stuff and listen to them. I would give it, just because he did the Austin podcast. If you've never heard those, then it's definitely worth picking up. But if you listen to those and you've already read his book.
Right.
Or what, then I would say just pass on this.
Right.
Because it's, you know, I mean, it was $25. And I paid that, and I'm all right with the fact that I paid it, but I don't think I'm ever going to watch it again.
Right.
To be honest with you, I don't see me ever sitting down and watching this again, as opposed to some of the others that I have. So I would give it 2 out of 4 chair shots.
Two out of 4 chair shots.
Yep. And I would say if you've never heard the Austin Jim Ross interviews with Bischoff or read his book. Like I said, you may want to check it out. It's good information, but if you've already heard that,
right.
It's not a lot of new information.
I just got his book online and, you know, just starting to read that, listen to those interviews, but also interested in watching this and seeing what's back. And right above our show notes today, there will be a picture that you can click on. It's a picture / banner. You know, on that banner, and you can go support the folks at RF Video and get the Eric Bischoff shoot interview.
All right, everybody. I want to welcome you to the first edition of the Double Dropkick Show shoot interview series with Heath Mulliken. I'm Mark Whitman. I'm going to be the moderator for this event. to ask all the questions that you wanted to know about Heath and a couple that you probably didn't think of. First question I got for you, Heath, is there anything you want to say to the people? Because you look like you got something you want to talk about before I get started.
I just want to say we are not in a motel.
No.
We do not have a backdrop behind us.
No.
We don't have a two-camera shot going on.
No, we don't have one static camera pointing right at Heath's face for 3 hours.
And we don't have a laptop with our show logo on the back of it.
None of that. It's just two guys in Heath's mom's basement doing what we always do.
That's right.
Laying down the best audio on the internet today.
Listen, and as long as you don't go to her to make sure that I have not told any lies in this, I'd appreciate it.
I won't. I promise you. I'm going to take you at your word. And so everybody knows I got a list of 20 questions in front of me. Heath doesn't know what I'm going to ask him.
No.
I'm sure that he is afraid that at some point I'm going to make fun of him. But actually, none of my questions are intended to make fun of him. I'm sure he'll say something along the lines that I will make fun of. But he doesn't know what I'm going to ask, and almost all these are wrestling related, but there are just a few I threw in there so we could get to know Heath a little bit better. And there's a couple on here that I just want to know about.
Right.
So I put them on there. You guys on the Facebook group, the wrestling you grew up with, ask a couple of questions. I'm going to ask him those questions. So, but the first question I got for you, Heath, is what one wrestler that everybody tends to agree is great or is an icon, or that's not my question. What? hold on and let me finish. What one wrestler that everybody tends to agree upon being an icon or being one of the greatest of all time that you just don't get, that you don't agree with, that you don't understand why people think that about him?
I would have to say Bret Hart.
Really?
I never really got into his promos when he would give his sunglasses to a kid in the crowd. It made me want to vomit. Not because of the kid, just I never could picture Bret Hart as a hero.
Really?
I don't know why. He just doesn't look like a hero to me. Now, do I have a ton of respect for Bret Hart? Yes. Do I think he's a phenomenal worker? Yes. But for me personally, he never taught me in the building. Now, having said that, there is a period of wrestling that I am ignorant of that I'm trying to re-educate myself. So if you ask me that question a year, I may have a different opinion.
Right. Of him. That's interesting. I didn't know that you didn't like Bret Hart.
And that's because I grew up, I'm an NWA guy.
Right.
You know. But I would say that would be the guy that everybody genuinely agrees on. Hey, this guy's.
Yeah, that he's incredible.
And I say he is great.
Yeah.
I just don't dig him.
Did you see the match with Austin at WrestleMania?
I did. Hey, you're talking about one match and that's great. And I'm not saying that wasn't a great match. I'm not saying.
Right.
And I just watched Survivor Series 97 last night. And that's a phenomenal. And that was a phenomenal program. I'm just saying, during the lull times,
you bring up Survivor Series, and this is your interview, but it reminds me of a thought that I've had. It's a shame that we get wrapped up in the finish of that match.
Oh my goodness.
And not talk about how incredible.
Save that for our Survivor Series show.
Okay.
Because that's going to be a all big right.
Well,
segment.
That's and I thought the same thing when we talked about Survivor Series, and I wanted to discuss that. But as a teaser,
yes.
I just don't after watching that match, it's phenomenal. Right. And we get caught up in the finish.
Do you know when that match, to me, takes a downturn? When they got in the ring.
Yes. Exactly.
But there were a lot, having, 17 years hindsight, I watched that match a little bit differently.
Right.
With a lot of the moving parts that were going on. So we'll talk about that.
Yeah, we will. Let's say one day I make one Rick Martel joke too many.
Uh-huh.
And you lose it.
Okay.
And you cut my head off.
Okay.
And you wind up on death row.
Okay.
The eve of your execution, they prepare your final meal. What is that meal?
Are you serious?
Yes. Did you have that question to ask me?
I did.
That's incredible. Folks, we didn't talk to one another about these questions. That's funny, man, that you would ask me that. Well, go ahead and tell me, and then I'll know. Now I can be thinking up what I want.
It would definitely be a lot of steak. It would be like, I want every cut of steak that there is. I want it all medium rare.
Yeah.
And I would like a box of ice cream sandwiches and some of my grandmother's macaroni and cheese.
So what was it about your grandmother's macaroni and cheese?
I don't know. It was just something about it. I don't know that there was anything different about it than other macaroni and cheese. I think it's just because my grandmother made it.
My grandfather also made, which everybody agrees was some of the best macaroni and cheese they've ever had. And I think some of it is just that I can't have it anymore.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think that's kind of got something to do with it sometimes. Now, you remember it from being a kid and eating it and loving it, and now they're not there anymore.
Right.
And that was the one thing that you kind of remembered about
them. My wife made macaroni and cheese the other night. Typically, macaroni and cheese, once you've put it in the refrigerator, it gets real clumpy. And even when you warm it up, you still got to break it apart. And somehow my wife made a batch of great macaroni and cheese, put it in the Tupperware, and it did not clump up.
Yeah.
And it was, I ate it the other night, and I'm like, honey, how? It was almost like a magic trick. How did you do this?
How did you do it?
So, definitely the steak. Oh, my goodness. I'm a big meat eater.
Yeah, me too. And medium rare. I like to hear that.
Yeah.
Because I don't understand anybody that would eat it well done.
You dishonor the animal.
Right. You do. And that's from a farm boy that grew up on an Angus farm.
That's right. That's right.
And you do. You dishonor those animals when you overcook them. I agree. If someone had never seen wrestling before, they were completely uneducated of what it is, what match and what promo, and they don't have to be by the same guy, but what match and what promo would you show them and say, this is what pro wrestling is, to get them hooked and make them a fan? And this is what it should be.
I would be torn between showing a clip of Dusty Saban Flair and where they break his leg.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Showing that to the Hard Times promo to, I guess, that Starrcade 85, maybe, to showing that match where he's wearing a boot and these guys are still after him, and it's just a crazy thing. But to show that whole... And you're talking about months at that.
Right.
Progressive. I love you.
Yeah.
I love you.
Yeah, I figured you would say the Hard Times promo.
But it would either be that or, if I'm allowed to give a second answer.
Oh, yeah, man. You can say as many as you want.
The whole where Magnum T.A. and Nikita signing the contract.
Yeah.
The Bob Geigel. Reprimand this. The Bob Geigel stripping you of the title. The Best of Seven series. I think there's a DVD, like a shoot. I don't know if it's got the matches, but they go through the whole program.
Yeah, there is.
And Magnum told me one time, not that I don't mean to name drop, but I was with
him. As I was telling my good friend Robert De Niro the other day, I hate it when people drop names.
I was with him one day, and we were talking, and he said we actually, there were probably 11 matches in that Best of Seven series, but they only, because we were doing all these house shows during the bash, and they would say, well, this is part of the Best of Seven, but they were just filming the seven. But I would show that Best of Seven series, and then I would show the Jatoa Ta. Thank you, Dusty. I would show the Nikita face turn. It's a three-part.
You're right, man.
It's the three-part Star Wars.
It's Star Wars, man.
So
that's right.
I would say one of those two.
That's cool. That's a good... Yeah. But if you had to narrow it down to just one match, not an angle, just a match that you think illustrates, this is what
See, part of me would say that the Tully and Magnum I Quit match.
Right.
But I sure don't want to scare them away from,
right?
This is real, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe I'm trying to think to kind of that. I'm trying to think back maybe to a WrestleMania moment where somebody wins. Maybe Austin and Shawn Michaels, which that's not a phenomenal match, but it's that changing of the guard. It's like this guy, Austin, has been fighting and fighting and fighting, and now this is his crowning achievement.
Right.
Man, that's a really good...
HBK and Undertaker at WrestleMania.
Oh, golly. Okay.
Which is
the retirement match of HBK,
either one of those.
Either one of those would be good, but to me, the one... hey, if this guy loses, he retires.
Yeah.
And then,
some stakes on the line. I'm going to actually skip ahead now.
Okay.
Because it'll go with what we're talking about. In your opinion... Uh-huh. Start to finish. Now, I'm not talking about angles, and I'm not.
Right.
What makes a good wrestling match from bell to bell?
I think when throughout the whole match, both teams have a chance to win. That it's not a big leap for me to believe. Hey, this guy could. That they could both win.
Mm-hmm.
That just the eyeball test shows me, this could be a legitimate contest.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that I think the psychology of one guy's trying to hurt the other, one guy's trying to defend his honor, that kind of deal. Right. That's going on in the match. I love, going out in the crowd. I think that's good. If you can throw in some high spots, not for the sake of high spots, but that add to the drama of the match. I think back to, and there's a thousand of these I could choose from, but when CM Punk does the elbow on the Undertaker at WrestleMania on the table. And the table doesn't break. And that affected the whole rest of the match because, he legitimately got hurt, or either he did a great job selling. But, to me, that was a high spot that made sense.
Uh-huh.
And in the heat of the moment, just for me, you take that out of that match loses a star, in my opinion.
Right.
But just that one moment. And then, just a finish that there's a build to it. I don't really, a lot of times in the old days, the finish would come out of nowhere. And I like that sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But I like where there's that build. Now, I don't mean that in the sense of Hulk up, hit the boot, drop the leg, 1, 2, 3.
Right.
You mean... I don't mean the build up in the sense of...
you're working to a finish.
Yes.
Clear that now we've entered into the last couple of minutes of the match and anything could happen.
Right.
Either one of these guys could take it, but we are working and building toward
the
finish of the match.
I'm actually not a fan of what people would call the five moves, even though that's what I grew up on. I mean, good night. There's no bigger Hulk Hogan mark than me.
Right.
I loved Hulk Hogan. Mm-hmm. And I love that because as a kid, man, that formula, but I'm not a kid anymore.
Right.
And so I wanted to, so I would say, yeah, a build to a really good finish. Japanese matches do phenomenal job of that Ring of Honor. What was the match I watched the other day? Kurt Angle and Edge when Angle gets his head shaved. That was a phenomenal build. So, does that answer your question?
It does, and it kind of leads me to my next question, and I already know how you're going to answer it based on something that you just said. There's this debate of who the bigger star is, Hogan or Austin. Who would you say ultimately is the bigger star in the history of the wrestling business?
I don't know. I don't know if this is the cop-out answer. I think in their era and in their time, they both took wrestling to heights that it had never been before. They both got wrestling mainstream coverage that it hadn't had before.
Mm-hmm. So Austin sold a lot more merchandise and a lot more pay-per-view revenue.
Right, and that because at Hogan's height,
right,
that wasn't a big part of it.
Right. And Hogan's the flip side to that is that Hogan's run on top was a long time.
Right.
In two different companies.
I don't think that in the short time of Austin's run, which if you boil it down is maybe
it's just a few years where he's on top. And that is to me the only knock on him being the greatest.
Right. But if you want to say who had the greatest 2-year run in history, it's no question to me. And how great would his have run been without the neck injuries and without the other stuff going on? But the flip side, you talk about pay-per-view and merchandising. What you're seeing in John Cena, John Cena is the modern-day Hulk Hogan.
Right.
Now, is he on a level with Hulk Hogan? No.
No.
But if you want to know what Hulk Hogan would have done with the current machine, all you got to do is look at John Cena.
Yeah, I tend to think that John Cena is probably like Vince McMahon's swan song.
Right.
That's everything he's been working for.
Yeah.
Is this guy that really seems to have a, behind the scenes, in the camera, he's got a good image. People tend to think well of him. He doesn't do anything to embarrass himself. You don't hear stories about John Cena getting drunk and, exposing himself in bars. You don't hear stories about John Cena doing steroids. And you don't hear stories about John Cena refusing to do business behind the scenes. You know what I mean?
You don't hear anything about
You don't hear anything negative about
You don't hear anything
about him.
Cena playing politics. He might be the only wrestler in history.
Oh, I'm sure he does
it.
I'm sure he does it, but it's just what I mean is like the whole Austin thing when he didn't want to put Brock Lesnar over.
Right.
And then you fast forward, years, and John Cena not only puts him over, but he takes the biggest butt whipping that he's ever taken in his life.
Right.
So it just seems maybe McMahon look, and that's probably why they keep the machine behind Cena.
Because
he's good for their business.
Yeah. And their business as a publicly traded company is to make money.
Right.
By hook or by crook.
Right.
It's to make money.
Yeah.
And if that means having your top guy cater to kids, and then that's what they're going to do. And if you don't like it, don't watch it. Just shut up about it. Can I just say that? Can everybody just shut up? If you don't like John Cena, just shut up. Just quit. Don't watch it.
Right.
I don't want to hear it anymore. I get it. You don't like Cena. Cena, I get it. Okay? Can we just move on? Good gosh. I mean...
Because it ain't changing.
He's not the worst thing that's happened in the history of wrestling.
No.
I mean...
By far, he's not the worst
thing. Don't... You're a grown person. Nobody's forcing you to go to Channel 105 Monday nights from 8 to 11. Nobody's forcing you to do that.
Right.
So to force yourself to watch it and then complain about it, the way I live my life, that's not how I want to live my life.
Right.
That's why I don't watch MSNBC. Because I don't want to have to poke my eyes out with a fork and clean my ears out with a cattle prod, you know? So can we just, I mean, that's how I feel about Cena.
Uh-huh.
I think you're right. I think we're changing characters.
Yeah, we are. We had a discussion the other day that I was becoming, because the whole last season, it was like me just making these horrible comments yeah. about people. And I was doing it like as part of the character that I right. was playing. And we talked last night, and I was like, I think I'm going to ease up a little bit on that. And now you have just picked right up with it. And it's now I'm the baby face and you're the heel this season, apparently. So that's all right, though. That could be good, man.
We'll see.
We haven't heard you spit a whole lot of venom, but when you did it the other week, it was great. Okay. And we got a lot of good response on it. I like it. You can only watch matches of one wrestler for the rest of your life. Who is it and why?
Of any... Oh, man.
Any... I don't... Man, it can be George South to Hulk Hogan. It don't matter, but just you got to pick...
Well, we're just talking matches. We're not talking...
You can watch one person's career. How about that? You can only watch
okay.
one.
That changes.
Yeah.
If you,
yeah,
if
you watch, I'm a match guy. Like you,
right.
you know, matches and angles. I don't care. Whichever one makes you happy, man. You can, but you can only pick one guy.
Right. If you're just talking matches, I would say AJ Styles. Guy never had a bad, in my opinion, never had a bad match. And for me, seeing him live, you know, when he was, before anybody knew who he was, really. I've always just had, but then you got, I mean.
AJ Styles.
I'm just, hey, your ass. That's
I
what
like
I've been,
AJ
hey,
Styles.
I'm saying that because that's what I've been, I mean, that's what I've been watching the last couple of weeks. I've been
right.
watching, I mean, you, I watched the, oh, the where he lost the I did,
yeah yeah when he
watched
when
that so, so he was fresh, so he's at the front of my mind
and he did it. That was a phenomenal man. You're right, I've never seen him have a bad match either.
So if you're just saying,
I just am surprised that it would be a modern era guy. Like I was
again,
anticipating a Ric Flair or a Hulk Hogan or a Shawn Michaels.
Well,
I think,
and I think
what
so,
I thought
so
you would say.
I'll tell you two reasons why that's. I think it's because, like I said, that's what I've been watching. That's what I've been trying to educate me. So he's at the front of my mind. Plus, I've seen a lot of Flair's matches.
I like that.
I've seen a lot of Hogan. Like, I've seen Hogan's career.
Mm-hmm. You haven't seen what AJ Styles is
going to
do.
That's correct. That's correct.
See, that answer makes sense to me.
Because if you're telling me for the... Well, you know, I can go back from day one of AJ Styles' career.
Yeah.
Whereas Hogan, I've... Hogan,
pretty much
Flair.
Seen. And Flair, you pretty much have seen it. If you've seen 10 Ric Flair matches, you've...
Right.
And that's not... he's great, and I love him, but you...
Yeah, if you've seen...
You've pretty
his,
much seen it.
His title... to me, the one Flair match that doesn't fit any of the formulas is when he beats Vader for the belt.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was a great... So, I mean, I would say... AJ Styles is on that list. You know, if you're going back, if I could go back and, yeah, I mean, most of the old guys, I've seen all their stuff really that I want to see.
Hmm.
Or they're not putting out anything new.
Right.
So, I mean.
That's a good answer. And I understand your logic behind it. You made
it's
a
logical,
good. It is logical. I love it.
Okay.
You know, it's a good answer, and it was a logical explanation of why. It makes sense to me.
Right.
That's
well, I
a
appreciate
good,
that.
I'm the baby face. I'm going to say something, and you're going to make fun of me this entire season.
That's exactly right.
Okay, everybody knows you're a preacher.
Okay.
So I'm taking the Bible out of this.
Okay.
Okay. No, wait a minute. So let me ask the question before you judge
okay.
what I just said.
Uh-huh.
Name three books that are your favorite books and why they are your favorite.
Okay.
Not including the Bible, because obviously I knew you would say that if I didn't take it out of the equation.
Man, that's a really good question.
Do you need to think about it? and we come back to it?
I would say, no, I can probably, I mean, if I've got to name three, I would
say. And you do have to name three.
I would say there's a really good book from a biblical perspective called Switch on Your Brain, and it's about brain science and toxic thoughts, but just a very, you know, by a doctor. But it's a very, to me, a very fascinating book about why we think the way we do and how addictions come about. It's been a very helpful book, but a very cool book to read. There's a great book called Crazy Love by a guy named Francis Chan, and that book kind of rocked everybody's world when it came out, as far as in the Christian community. Just, you know, really challenging book, you know, challenge, you know, the status quo about faith. And the third one would be, and this guy's pretty controversial now, but this guy, a pastor named Rob Bell, wrote a book called God Wants to Save Christians. And it was challenged a lot of my thinking as far as, doesn't put America down or anything like that, but just talks about, you know, some of the things, the preconceived notions that a lot of American Christians have, and then kind of looks at the Bible to say, okay. But, you know, Rob Bell's written a lot of controversial things. I certainly don't agree with everything he's written or said, but that book was, you know, pretty formative to my thinking, the way I look at some things. So I would say those, and those are all fairly recent, which I guess, you know.
You're not a guy who lives in the past, are you?
Well, in a lot of ways, I am. In a lot of ways, I live in the past too much. Yeah. But
I would have said Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. So that gives you an idea of the parallel. But I think you and I are like a great illustration of how the world could get along if it wanted to. Don't you?
I think the big difference between us is you're not afraid for the world to know that you're nuts and I got to wear a mask.
Maybe that's true. You know what I mean? Maybe that's true. But I do a lot of, like, I was just thinking about that last night, that you and I are this blueprint.
Right.
Because there couldn't be two more opposite people.
Yeah.
We do agree on a lot of things. Yeah. Unless you had, like, you know, Christopher Hitchens and Billy Graham or Bill Clinton and Ronald Reagan doing a podcast, there couldn't be two more opposite people. Right. But we focus on what we get along with, but we don't argue about stuff.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You know, I respect your opinions and you respect my opinions.
Right.
Bam, you know.
I read a lot of fiction and stuff, but yeah, I need to read more old books.
Yeah, that's kind of, you know, I was wondering about maybe a classic book that you might like.
Give me one of those. Screwtape Letters.
That is a good, that's a really good book.
That's probably my, you know, I'm probably in the minority. That's probably my favorite C.S. Lewis book.
It would be mine too, because I liked it. Enjoyed it.
If you tie it into wrestling, it's all about this young wrestler and this manager is trying to get him, trying to help him along in his career.
Right.
And,
you know. No, that is a good book. I enjoy it. Because I've never read the Chronicles of Narnia or anything. I'm not really into fantasy.
I didn't know who C.S.
like
Lewis
that.
Was until I got to college.
Really?
So I missed out on that in my childhood. And
it seems like somebody gave me a copy of the Screwtape Letters in high school.
You might have my copy.
No, because I bought a copy.
How did we get through high school and he was never mentioned in any of all the literature we had to read in high school?
Well, I think because of the religious overtones and stuff like that. And I don't know that it's, even today, Lewis is not looked at as one of the great writers of, he is in Christian communities, for folks that don't know, I studied literature in college, and he was never brought up then either as this great American or great British or whatever. He was just never talked about as this great author.
But in the pool of Christian writing, he's...
Oh, yeah, he's top. Yeah, everybody's like, oh, man, he's the greatest. Right. But, I mean, when you compare him to Shakespeare, or even if you want to compare him to the person that wrote that kind of literature,
right.
Tolkien, it's just no comparison.
Right.
That their stuff is infinitely better than Lewis's work.
I think the point I'm trying to make is I can read and I do read.
Yeah, that's right.
And I use periods... Now, and capital letters at the beginning of a sentence.
There's a great book that I don't know that I would recommend it to you. I don't know, but it's by, you know who Bertrand Russell is?
I've heard the name, yeah.
Okay, he wrote a book called Why I Am Not a Christian.
Right.
And it's this, it's a
right
thesis on why he is not a Christian.
Right.
And I would think, like, as a church leader, I would recommend it.
Yeah.
It's something that you, because it does get, and I'm not an atheist. Let me right. make sure people understand that. So I'm not an atheist, but my mind.
Right.
I acknowledge everything, and we're not getting into religion here.
Right.
And certainly don't want to go down that road, but you should check that book out.
Yeah.
Let's get off all that. Who do you think the greatest big man wrestler of all time is? Other than me.
I think you said it correctly when you looked Big Van Vader in the eye at the Fan Fest and said, you're the greatest big man of all time. I think, absolutely, the guy was believable. He worked with big guys. He worked with small guys. The guy could move. He was legitimate, world-class athlete. He was that rare big man who was a spectacle in that he is a big man. He is this intimidating character, but the guy could work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would that's who I would say. Big Van Vader.
See, I like you again. You let me down with that Bret Hart thing, but you redeemed yourself with the Vader.
Thank you.
Then this is just something that I want to know.
All right.
Never ask you this that I know of. Where did you come up with your kids' names? Because they have some unique names,
okay.
And I was just curious.
So,
and if you don't want to answer for privacy reasons, I understand.
No, absolutely not. My wife, her family, there's a history of a disease called Huntington's disease. My wife got tested for that not long after we had been married because we were thinking about having kids. If you have Huntington's, your kids have a 50-50 shot of getting it. She tested positive for the disease, and so we went through about 6 months where we were not going to have kids. We were looking into adoption and things like that. We experienced a pretty powerful healing. What I sense is a healing experience where we just felt led to have kids. Like, just it was clear to us that's what we were supposed to do. So we found out she was pregnant in February of 2003. And I said, you know, this is a miracle. You know, that'd be a great name for a kid, Miracle.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in April, we found out we were having twins. Well, you can't name one child Miracle and the other one Bob. So I give all credit to her. We had been talking about different names. And can I just say something? If someone you know is having a baby and you ask them, hey, what names are you thinking about? And they tell you, and you're like, oh, I don't like that. You deserve to get punched.
I agree.
And I'm guilty of that. I've done that before. So we kind of got to the point where we really weren't talking about it. But I got home one day. And my wife had done some research, and she had broken down the word miracle, the different letters. So she had Milena, M-I, Ray is her middle name, R-A. And then she had Charis, which is the Greek word for grace. And then so I walk in the door. All right. This is the God's honest truth. This is how it happened. I walk in the door. My wife's at the computer. She's got these names. She says, Heath, I need a name that starts with L-E. I just immediately, no hesitation, Leia, Princess Leia, that's it. We had a deal. I mean, it's so their names, you know, broken up is Miracle. Now, my son's name We knew we were pregnant, knew we were having a boy. I was watching Seinfeld one night, the episode.
That's what I thought.
The Drake, love the Drake, yeah. Love the Drake. I said, there's the name.
That's it.
So, and that was before the hip-hop artist Drake, or no one had that name. And also Tim Drake, who was Robin. So that's, and then his middle name's Heath. He's, you know, named after me. And
so then everybody's going to go through life calling him Keith.
Yeah, that's why his name is Drake.
That's why he called
him
Drake.
But he gets called Jake. Now the girls, man. Oh, Karis, her name is butchered. Milena's name is butchered.
Oh, so, I'm sure.
Hey, not everybody can be Mark.
It's a great four-letter name, you know, yeah, what I mean?
That's right.
One syllable, four letters, everybody can spell it. Yeah. But it drives me crazy when people call me Marcus, which I hate,
okay,
because it's not my name.
Note to self.
I'm not Marcus. I didn't shorten my name. I'm Mark. I don't spell it with a C. I spell it with a K. And I don't like to be called Marky Mark or ask where the Funky Bunch is at. I hate Mark Wahlberg for those things, man. If I could punch Mark Wahlberg in the face for one thing, it would be introducing Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch. Because ever since then, so I shouldn't have given you that ammunition, but I did.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you for that, by the way. I was kidding. That was just something that I was, because I knew your kids' names. Drake, I had a feeling,
yeah,
was for that, because I know we both are big Seinfeld marks, but the other two I was just kind of curious about.
Right.
You've already answered this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Your favorite storylines and angles, and I think you pretty much answered that with the Nikita Koloff Magnum TA.
Right, the Nikita and Magnum, anything with the horseman up to Telinar and leaving.
Yeah.
Once they're gone, that's, to me, that's the
right
horseman.
Right, yeah. It was horseman in name only after
right.
that, I agree. Even though I liked Pillman and Benoit, I just, they were not, that wasn't a horseman.
And I like the storyline leading up to WrestleMania 3 where Andre comes on Piper's
yeah.
Pit, challenges Hogan. They did the Saturday Night's main event, Battle Royal, where Andre eliminated Hogan easily. So I love the build. They used to, you know, Mark, I don't know if you know this, they used to build to matches.
Really?
I've heard
in the bygone eras they might
have. Yes, yes.
Trying to sell something. Are there any times as a wrestling fan you were offended or ashamed to be a fan? Whether it be people around you or whether it be the storyline,
I would say I was actually watching some old stuff, and where Dusty comes in and he's going after Telly, and Telly runs away, and Telly and Baby Doll interview, and Telly's like, "Baby Doll, you go tell him I'm not coming back out there." So Baby Doll goes to the ring and she smacks Dusty Rhodes, and Dusty Rhodes hits her back.
Right.
Any type of man on woman, that makes me feel very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because that's all too real in our society.
Mm-hmm.
But then also, you know, the whole deal when Vince was the higher power and they kind of put Austin on the symbol, that made me feel, I was like, was this the only option you had?
You know what about that bothered me was that they got it from the ECW deal when they it was a big deal. And I firmly believe that their intention was that there would be all this outrage about that.
Right.
That's really why I think they did it. I think they wanted to manufacture outrage. So
right.
it would get, and I, that's why that bothered me.
And
because it offended me. I just thought, this has already happened previously.
You know why it offended me even worse was you've built up to this and that's Vince McMahon.
Right.
It was a bad angle.
Right.
You know, when they did the whole deal, Shane and Vince versus Shawn Michaels and God, I was as offended as a Christian as I was as a wrestling fan because it wasn't logical.
Yeah, it was stupid.
I would love to know, you know, when Shawn Michaels gets around to doing the shooting interviews, I'd love to know how that came about and what were they thinking, because That's not going to make anybody want to buy the paper. So
it was just silly.
I think there's a line there, and it's a fine line, and I understand it's entertainment, and I understand it's not real, and a good gravy. They've had a guy who's supposed to be undead for 20 years.
He would probably be pretty funky by now.
But I would say above that, just the male fit. Like, when Bubba Ray put Dixie through a table, I was greatly offended by that. That TNA, you have built your whole year's angle around male-on-female violence, whether it's real or not. Just the fact that there's no circumstance where it's okay for a man to put a woman through a table.
I don't know. Especially if she's been running her mouth, but she hadn't physically assaulted you or anything.
That's right.
You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. No, I don't like that. Now, occasionally back in the day, like Hulk Hogan might atomic drop Sherry Martel or something like that. And that's kind of cartoonish.
Yes.
And, you know, like that. And that didn't really bother me. But, like, there are times, like you're talking about, when Dusty hit her and when Jake hit Elizabeth. It's too much, man. It's not. But when Jake did it, he's the villain.
Yeah.
And he got what was coming to him.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe it was, I'm not saying it was all right, but at least at the end of the day, he got what was coming to him. But Dusty was supposed to be the good guy.
And David Crockett sold that as, she had it coming.
Yeah.
She had it coming.
Yes.
I mean, David, they set back women's issues 30 years.
But let's call it what it is. In North Carolina in the 80s, there are probably a lot of men sitting around going, yeah, she did have it coming. She's been a little too lippy.
I was amazed that there was no... Because it was like, she slapped him, Dusty slaps her back. There's no pause. It is an immediate pop. Don't even get me. I haven't even watched all the old Memphis stuff. And that was so,
They did some things shouldn't have done. Why? And I think I already know the answer to this because we've talked about it before, but. What made you ultimately decide, okay, we're going to do this show? Why did you ultimately, at the end of the day, want to do this show?
I think I had such a fun time that time you and I had lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I had not been already involved in other podcasts at the time, I wouldn't have had the knowledge. It wouldn't have been doable.
Right.
I wouldn't have thought it was possible. But I had so much fun that day, and I was trying to get back into wrestling and just wanted to hang out with you.
Right.
We could, I think we've said it to each other, we could get together every couple of weeks and never hit the record button and have a good time and talk about stuff. And I just felt like if we're going to talk about this stuff, why not record it?
Right.
Why not see? Because I think for every Mark and Heath, there's 10,000 other people who've had the same experience, who feel the same way about wrestling, who are as passionate about it. And so to try to tap into that market and say, hey, we can be the voice to the voiceless or remind you of, what wrestling you grew up with,
Yeah, I like that. I'm not talking about Crockett Promotions here. Okay. WCW, once Turner bought it, versus WWF.
Mm-hmm.
Who ultimately... And clearly WWF won, but at the height, who do you think was putting on the better product?
At the height of the Monday Night War, is that what you mean?
Yeah, I mean I'm not talking about when WCW was hot and WWF wasn't, or when WWF was hot and WCW. I'm talking about when both of them were hot,
mm-hmm.
and both of them were firing on all cylinders kind of at the same time. And it was only a brief window that before it kind of rotated back to WWF. But there was a time when they were both white hot and there were 12 million people watching wrestling every Monday night between the two shows. Who do you think was putting on the best product?
Pains me to say. I'm going to have to go WWF.
Yeah.
Because with WCW, Now, as I watched it, did I pop every time Sting repelled? Was that a compelling angle? But that was the last... Nitro, the last 5 minutes were compelling.
Right.
For me, the WWF had a broader spectrum of quality characters.
Mm-hmm.
That everybody didn't have to be in. You had Austin, who wasn't in anything. Right. But you had DX, Nation of Domination, the Disciples of Apocalypse. You had all these different groups.
Different factions.
You had all these different angles, and they weren't just centered. I mean, obviously, the Austin McMahon angle was the angle.
Right.
But I think... And I think that proved out over time. Is they weren't just... I mean, you were watching because of Austin McMahon, but they had other stuff. They developed other stars. Edge and Christian. The Rock. I mean, if I knew Edge and Christian were going to... I mean, that's... You know, the whole five-second pose. That was great. Kurt Angle. Great. I mean, so they're... Long story short, WWE.
There you go. Justin Donahue wants to know, if your wrestling career hadn't been tragically cut short in ballroom dancing class, what would your gimmick have been and what would you have used as a finish?
I was always a Rock and Roll Express mark. So I would have been kind of the rocker dude and probably, you know, always loved a DDT, but, you know, that's kind of Jake's move.
Yeah.
Maybe flying elbow, super fly splat. You know, I don't know. Like when I fake wrestled invisible people, you know, my finisher was DDT or it was a flying elbow or, I mean, this was before you cut flips and stuff like that, before people were doing that. But, you know, I'd say one of those two.
Yeah.
And I definitely feel like, especially after talking with you, that it's not as easy as just walking in and being like, hey, here's my gimmick and my finish.
Yeah, it's not that easy.
Yeah, so I think looking back, if I were going to start today, it definitely wouldn't be a rocker. I think you have to find something in your personality.
Yeah.
And I think for me, a good gimmick would be the good guy who's trying not to go bad. The good guy who cheats or does something really devious on accident and just falls apart in the ring. Just like, oh, I can't believe I did that, you know, whatever.
A conflicted soul.
Yes.
That's interesting. Scott Hicks wanted to know if you had got into the wrestling business the same time I did.
Right.
Would you have wanted to wrestle and be a partner, or would you have wanted to manage me?
I think it would have depended. I think you've said it, and I take your word for it, that you picked it up pretty quick. And other people that I know have said the same thing, that you came to the physicality of wrestling very naturally. I think after a couple of weeks of, or maybe not even that long, of you and I training, it would have been obvious to me, am I going to be any good or not?
Right.
And I think at that point, I would have made the decision, I still want to do this. I'm not going to be, Mark, if I'm wrestling and I'm your partner, I'm holding you back, let me be your manager.
Right.
I think that's the way I would have wanted to do it. And I think you would have been honest to say, Heath, you holding me back. Maybe you'll do that.
No. I'll probably do that on the show eventually.
But I think we've talked about it too, that I think because of our contrasting styles, our contrasting sizes, we could have a great program.
Oh, yeah.
Together.
Yeah, no doubt.
So that would have been interesting to me. I don't know that we would have ever made, if I could work, I think we could have made a good tag team. Because, again, those same contrasts. Yeah, it would have been a great program. Because then you build up to the turn. I think we could have made money.
Oh, I think
we could have. I mean, not a lot. $5.
Yeah, we could have made gas money.
Yeah.
So do you want to tell because the question has been asked, there is a piece of history that we've never talked about here before.
Yes.
That almost happened.
Right.
But didn't.
Right.
there was the promotion that I worked for scheduled a show at the Pendleton High School.
Right.
And the promoter didn't know that I went to Pendleton.
Right.
And he said, we're going to be doing this. And it was a few months away, you know. And I said, oh, man, that's great. I went to school there. He went, really? I was like, yeah. And I said, look, I got a buddy. And I know that it would just be the coolest thing in the world for him if he could come in and be my manager. Now, you can speak to your side of what you were thinking at the time. Right. In the interim of all of this, I laid out an angle for our...
And I've never heard this.
You've never heard it because we didn't see each other a lot. I had just called you. Right. And so people have to remember, we didn't have cell phones and emails and texts and all that. No. It wasn't as easy to... If you didn't see one another all the time, it wasn't as easy to communicate. So I had laid this angle out where Mr. Cunningham would come to the ring.
The principal
of the school. People who listen, they know Irvin Cunningham. And he's a legend in Pendleton.
Yeah.
And he knew us. He knew all of us by name. He had been with us for like six years and had been our principal. And I thought it would have been really cool if he had come to the ring at the beginning of the show and said, you know, we got two Pendleton High School alumni here, and we're just proud of these guys and this, and that you and I would come to the ring, and he would do some sort of presentation where, okay, you know, you guys were just so proud of you.
Right.
And I would have probably just printed something out and put it in a frame or whatever. And he would make the presentation, and then we would throw it down and disparage Pendleton High School.
That's right.
I would grab Mr. Cunningham and you would paintbrush him, you know, and the babyface promoter would come out and make the save.
Yeah.
Because I had already kind of said, I'm going to do a singles match that night because we're in Pendleton. And this was a big deal to me. And the promoter knew it was a big deal to me.
And that went along with the only thing I had in mind was that I was going to wear my brother's tennis letterman's jacket. And at some point, take it off. I was going to come out, play to the crowd.
Right.
That was originally. Throw it down and stomp it.
We were coming out in Pendleton High School gear, you know, black and gold and all that to start with.
Yeah.
That was the, and then turn it. Because I knew if we hit Mr. Cunningham, we're going to get nuclear heat.
Yes.
Because everybody loved Mr. Cunningham.
Yes, yes.
So I knew if he slaps him, if he would, and I don't know that he would have gone for it because we didn't get that far. And I'll tell you why here in a minute.
Yeah.
So then the baby face would have made the save, and then we would have got to the match, and you and I would have come out. The guy that I was going to work would have come out, and then he would have said, you know what, since you got your little buddy Heath here, or whatever your name would have been, I got somebody as my backup, and we would have hit like some old Motown, because everybody knows Mr. Cunningham was a big Motown fan.
Yeah, yeah.
But not like My Girl, something like Ball of Confusion.
Right.
You know, one of those kind of songs. And he would have come out, and then we would have worked to the finish where you got up on the ring apron, Mr. Cunningham got up on the ring apron and knocked you out while the ref was distracted. Then he hits me, and then I've turned around and go into the finish of the baby face.
Yeah.
And traditionally in wrestling, you win in your hometown.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted to lose because Mr. Cunningham cost me the match.
Right.
In Pendleton. Because I just thought, first of all, the heat would have been nuclear. And then the pop for Cunningham hitting me would have been, boom. I mean, it would have just blown the roof off of that little high school gym. So that was what I had laid out. And I knew that if we don't get to come back, it was still great, and if we do get to come back, we got a story that we can keep going with.
Yeah.
Either way.
Do you think? And listen, you've laid out a logical angle that I love. would it? And again, pardon my wrestling ignorance. Would it have added anything to the angle, or would it have taken away if post match? I can't believe you've lost. I'm all upset. We kind of get into it, and you give me your finisher and lay me out.
No, because I didn't want to leave as the babyface. That would have had me leaving as the babyface. I wanted to be the heel so that we can come back.
Oh.
Either way, if that's the only chance we get to do it, then it ended with a logical conclusion.
Gotcha.
We got beat.
Gotcha.
If we get to come back, then we got a built-in storyline. Yeah. I lost, but I lost because you cheated.
That's
so
right.
I want a rematch.
There you go.
And so we got something to go with
either
way.
That's why you're the booker.
Right, and you're not. And you just do what I tell you to in the wrestling ring.
That's right. That's
no, but what happened in the interim, and I'm not going to go into a lot of detail because there's a lot of legal things.
Right.
The promoter physically assaulted his wife.
Right.
Not like Dusty and...
No.
But it was bad.
Yeah.
And he got locked up and went to prison. And the show got canceled. Yeah. And I couldn't get in touch with you.
Yeah.
To there again, we didn't have, and so I was trying to get in touch with Heath and couldn't get in touch with Heath, and then you can tell your side of what
happened. He had, Mark had kind of told me what time to be there. I pull up to the high school. Gates are locked. Nobody there. So I think at that point I had a bag phone in my car. where you get like 30 minutes a month.
Yeah.
Try to call the number I had for you, didn't get an answer. Came by your apartment. Really didn't know what apartment. I mean, I knew the general area.
I know Caleb's in the general
vicinity. Just panicked and just, I felt bad because I thought, oh, I'm missing. I'm blowing it. This is one of my one opportunity and I'm blowing it.
Yeah, and I felt bad because I like really wasn't like I'm going to dodge Heath's phone calls or anything. And I couldn't get in touch with you. You know what I mean? And I always felt bad. I apologize for that.
Hey, there's no apology needed. Huh? Well, there is, but it's not from you.
Yeah, right. There's some apologies that need to be dealt out. So that's that story. It was going to happen, and because of some unfortunate events, it didn't happen.
It's things like that that keep that hunger. To do something. For me, at least.
Right.
You've done it. Right. But I've never had the chance. And I think, had I been able to do that back, that was 95, you know, back in the day, that would have scratched my itch.
It probably would have, yeah.
But I never got my itch scratched.
Well, I can't help you with that. I had another question here, but I changed my mind on the way over. Because I think it's a better question. What horror movie icon scares you the most? And I know you're probably going to say
Jaws. Because Krueger, Krueger's not real. That's not really going to happen. Jason, same thing with him. You can get your butt eaten by a shark. Above that, though, definitely The Exorcist.
But The Exorcist is, there's a demon. The Exorcist wasn't the bad guy.
The demon. So yeah,
the demon is what scares
any
you.
Movie with a demon.
Yeah.
But I don't. Watch horror movies.
But that's why I wanted to ask you.
I was always scared to death of Jaws, and I might let my son watch it. Nug's never gonna go.
Yeah, my nephew loves that. What are some of your favorite stipulation and gimmick matches? Not a specific match. I mean, just like what kind of stipulations and gimmicks do you like in matches?
Love a good logical cage match.
Yeah. I think it's time to retire the concept if there's no bleeding.
Yes. Hair matches are always good.
True. Yeah.
See, back in the day, Loser Leave Town, that was good. Because you didn't know how the business worked, so you didn't.
Right.
But also, once you did kind of know how the business worked, you're like, oh, that guy's going to be on Mid-Atlantic next week. Or, that guy's going to lose in Mid-Atlantic, going to be on, WWF.
Right.
Scaffold matches.
Yeah, those suck.
To me, the matches where you're tied together, bull rope, Russian chain, to me, those, you can't. Really, you have a fight. I mean,
right.
Piper and Valentine show that with the dog collar match. But so to me, there's some elements when you're tied together you can't do.
Right.
Can we bring back the Texas Tornado match?
Why not?
I don't know. Because every match is a Texas Tornado.
Yeah, they're all Texas Tornado matches now. Yeah, that's, and I like that. I like the wild, out of control. Anything goes, no disqualification, no time limit, no, non-sanctioned lights out matches. I like those. When the two guys
know how to do it. Right.
Right.
But the thing is, that was, you just described every match in ECW.
Right. And maybe that's why I liked ECW so much.
Right, because, you know, yeah. So.
Your back's to the wall. Got a gun to your head.
Oh, goodness.
Who is your favorite wrestler, and what is your favorite match of all time? And if you say AJ Styles.
No.
You say whoever you want to say. I'm a babyface this season.
I would say Dusty.
Favorite of all time.
Because he was, no pun intended, he was the common man.
Mm-hmm.
And he was going to be... He was going to lose, and then he was going to make this comeback. He was Mid-Atlantic version of Hulk Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as far as getting hulked up. But, man, I'm a mark for when Dusty starts punching people and does the bionic elbow, and I'm doing my arms kind of in the circle. I'm a mark for that.
Right.
I mean, I pop for that kind of stuff. And maybe that's just me. Favorite match? Man, it's weird because I've been watching all these other matches now.
Uh-huh.
And so my love is broadening outside of Mid-Atlantic during the 80s. But again, you know, man, Magnum and Telly in the cage.
That's it. Ultimately, that's your favorite?
Because the good guy not only won.
Mm-hmm.
He humiliated the bad guy.
True. That's a good match. It's on my list of favorites. I wouldn't say it's my favorite.
But again, like, and this is, you know, one of my weaknesses now is I'm trying to broaden my horizons. Mm-hmm. I know there's other great matches, but for me, I just remember how I felt when I first watched that match. That or the first War Games.
Yeah.
The first War Games was just like, what? Can I switch? The first War Games. Because the feeling was, what is about to happen?
Right. It was somebody new and die. Unique, right. Yeah.
So I would say that, yeah, the first war game.
Because
there had never been anything like that. And they had to set that cage up.
And hadn't been anything like it since then.
No. And it also featured, you know, if I had to make a list of my 10 favorite wrestlers, they're all in there.
Most of them are in.
Right.
Any times that wrestling made you cry or tear up?
Like in a good way or bad
way? Yeah, in a good way. In a good way. Or a bad way. I mean, you know, when Owen Hart passes away.
I would say, you know, that next night.
Right.
When people were talking about Owen Hart.
Right.
I'm going to tell you, dude, when Bret Hart came back and him and Shawn Michaels did their deal in the ring.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying I teared up, but that was emotional.
Get you a lump in the throat.
It gave me the lump in the throat.
Yeah. Flair retiring.
Oh, and yeah. When Flair did his Hall of Fame speech.
Yeah.
Hall of Fame speeches in general, when it's kind of like
yeah,
the,
yeah.
Like Jake Roberts this year, his Hall of Fame speech, it was just like, and that was real. And like the guy's basically up there confessing all his sins,
mm-hmm.
and saying it was powerful. I mean, in the preaching world, I mean, that'll preach. What he did, it'll preach. But yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think who won a belt, who won like the title, and they had been going for it, and it kind of made me emotional. But I can't really think of that.
Yeah, I don't recall that. I don't recall anybody chasing a title and finally winning and crying over that.
Nah.
Because even like when Austin won, it was more of a, yeah, you know what I mean?
Right,
like usually that's the reaction when somebody wins a title.
Yeah.
But when Shawn Michaels kicked Ric Flair, I don't mind telling you. That and Owen Hart that night on Raw.
Yeah.
It's about the only two times. And I wasn't a huge Owen Hart fan.
Right.
It was just... you know, you're watching all these tough guys cry, you know.
Yeah.
And when I watched that Ultimate Warrior documentary, and yes. Vince McMahon was crying.
Yes.
That, you know what I mean? You yeah. were kind of like, wow. Yeah. You know?
When you're watching stuff.
When your emotions are being manipulated like that, it's kind of hard to, you know what I'm saying? Because that's what they're doing. They're manipulating your emotions. When the Ric Flair stuff was different, you know.
The Monday after Ultimate Warrior died, and they did this opening montage.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching it live and recording. I went back. I downloaded that song.
Yeah.
And now every time I hear that song, it's a pretty powerful song. It's a, yeah, good rhythm, and that's, I don't even know the band.
You can dance to it.
but every time I hear that song, like, it does, you know, it's an emotional kind of deal.
Yeah.
Because it reminds me of that night, and it reminds me of that month. So montages like that, man. That,
remember the when Foley retired, and they did the I Will Remember.
Time?
Well, right. The originally yeah, right. when we actually thought he was going to retire. Before he came back 3 months later. But they did the Sarah McLachlan, I Will Remember You, the song that they do for the Sad Dog commercials.
Yeah.
But they did that on the Mick Foley.
I remember going,
oh, man, I will remember you, Mick. You know what I mean? And then, like, I didn't have to remember him because he showed back up a month or two later. And and pretty much has for the past 15 years ever since then. He showed up every couple of months. So. You know, I mean, I can't miss you if you won't go away.
Memo to Cena.
Yep. All right. Last question.
Okay.
I'm not talking about matches and angles and stuff like that here. But your favorite wrestling related memories, stuff that you did, or, you know, places when you would be with, you know, I remember this match and I liked it. I mean, I'm talking about the feeling of where you were at and things like that.
Oh, 88, Greenville, Crockett Cup win. And we talked about this on the show. I won't delve into it. If you want to go back into either our best tag teams or tag team wrestling show, when you knew, when they announced Luger and Sting are now going to be a team in this tournament. They had never teamed together. The roof blew off that place. It was amazing. It was just, and I'm, you know, 13, 14 years old, so I was popped loud for that. That was big. Monday Nitro at the Georgia Dome. It wasn't the big one where Goldberg won the belt, but my first time seeing Hulk Hogan, even at his height as a heel,
mm-hmm.
that was a huge pop by the whole crowd.
Right.
Because Hulk Hogan had not been in the South.
Right.
I've
never seen Hulk Hogan live.
Really?
Not that I know of. And I would remember
yeah.
seeing Hogan, and I've never seen him. I've seen just about everybody else, man.
And I would say this year watching WrestleMania with you was big.
Mm-hmm.
Because we saw The Undertaker streak end. But just the fact that you and I were watching WrestleMania together.
Yeah,
that was big. And that it was, you know, part of the show. And then we did the post show. It was
right.
good. That was big.
Because that's what the world needs is a couple of fat, you know, pasty white guys talking about wrestling.
Hey, who you calling pasty?
That's right. That's right. What about Fan Fest?
Oh, gosh. I wasn't even thinking about yeah. that. It, you know, pretty much any time I get starstruck.
Yeah.
You know, I've talked about it before. The day I got to spend with Magnum T.A. Nikita, my friend, was interviewing them.
Right.
So I literally got to spend the day mm-hmm. with Magnum and Nikita. That, I'm still just, you know, in awe of that. Got to meet Ric Flair at a signing. Just a lot of good wrestling memories.
Well, good. Well,
do I have to pick one of those?
No, you don't have to pick one. I was just wanting to know some of your favorite memories.
You know what my real favorite memory is?
What's that?
Each and every time we walk into this basement, knowing that what we're about to say is going to impact somebody's life. What we say is going to make somebody say, hey, I need to hit up YouTube. I need to watch some old Jim Crockett wrestling, or hey, I've never even heard. I can't even spell IWGP. So how do I find? So that's my. We're making memories now.
That's right.
And who knows what the future holds? But that's. I think it'll be good.
I do too. I do too. Well, for the Double Drop Kick Show, I'm Mark Whitman.
And I guess I'm Heath Mulliken.
Hey, before we go, go to DoubleDropKick.com, click on the banner, follow me at Twitter at the DDK Show.
Hey, at Heath Mulliken, MULLIKIN. Yes, follow us both. Hey, what questions did Mark leave out? Hey, what do you know about me now that you don't like? Or do you say, oh, that's cool. You know, that's nice. Oh, you know, man, maybe you're from Pendleton. You'd say, hey, if you had done that in Pendleton, I would disown you. We would no longer be friends. Let me tell you, folks, it still may happen. I'm not saying I can put that Letterman's jacket on, but what I am saying is this heel, my heel turns 39 years in the making.
That's right. You got one coming. And I've been a heel for so long that now I can be a baby face and I'm all right with it.
So check us out. Join the conversation on Facebook. Like our page, The Double Dropkick Show, and join the conversation at The Wrestling They Grew Up With. That's our Facebook group where you can talk about, guess what you talk about on there, The Wrestling You Grew Up With. Also, don't forget about this week's gimmick table. What do they need to do to check out the gimmick
table? They need to go to DoubleDropKick.com. They need to click on that banner, and they can follow the links, and they can get it. Actually, I think we're going to put the Bischoff shoot. You'll have to get that through RFvideo.com, but I'll give you all that information.
But there'll definitely be a link there, and I'm excited to watch that.
Yeah, it should be. It's good.
It's not going to be as big a seller as this shoot interview.
Oh, no. People kind of care what Bischoff has to say about WCW in the 90s. What they really want to know is what you and I thought about it.
That's exactly right. So, as always, we've already signed off once.
Yeah, we have, but it's not our usual formula. I signed us off, not you.
So again, for the Double Dropkick Show, I'm Heath Mulliken.
I'm Mark Whitman.
And that's it this week, fans. So long for now.
I think we could have made money.
Oh, I think
we could have. I mean, not a lot. $5.
Yeah, we could have made gas money.
Yeah.